Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Jax DiEugenio. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Alexander Drylin, MD, about the Phase 1-2 ARIS-1 trial investigating zidesamtinib in TKI-appreciated patients with advanced ROS1-positive non-small cell lung cancer.
In the ARIS-1 dataset, we had patients who were treated or pre-treated, I should say, with repotrectinib or taletrectinib, for which we don't have any targeted therapy that's approved, and there's no objective response rate out there because it's the first drug to demonstrate activity in that setting. And so the implications for patients are that if you fail one of these drugs, there's hope because you can hop on the further next-generation inhibitor, and your cancer can restabilize, and it can work for a very long time. Now, if you look at the one prior TKI setting, say someone with a ROS1-positive lung cancer got crizotinib or entrectinib, and this was looking at the registrational cohorts for repotrectinib and taletrectinib, the numbers numerically, and we're doing cross-trial comparisons, do look better across multiple metrics with zidesamtinib versus repo and taletrectinib when you look at factors like objective response rate, especially if you pull out patients who are post-crizotinib, which made up the majority of patients who are treated on repotrectinib and taletrectinib. But in addition, durability also does appear improved. In particular, if you look at the median progression-free survival of one prior TKI, in the repo and taletrectinib setting, that was in the ballpark of, say, 9 months, give or take. Here you're seeing 23.8 months, so almost 2 years. So I do think that that's a meaningful advance. With other agents like repotrectinib and entrectinib, those drugs hit not only ROS1, but TRK. And that's a liability because it does come with neurologic side effects like dizziness, weight gain, paresthesias, and withdrawal pain when you stop these TKIs. So what the chemists did with zidesamtinib is they were very talented and said, let's exclude the inhibition of TRK. And in the design of zidesamtinib, it is a TRK-sparing agent relative to these older agents. And the thought there was that we would improve safety and patients would feel better without these neurologic side effects. So talking about the toxicity, we did not see in the treatment emergent adverse events that were 15% or greater, any of the things that I mentioned, dizziness, weight gain, paresthesia, et cetera. The most common AEs were peripheral edema, CPK increase, fatigue, constipation, and most of those were grade 1 or 2 in severity. So I think that the people that designed the drug did achieve their goals on the safety front. Now, you have a lot of nerves in the brain. Obviously, it's all nerves, right? And so these older agents that are CNS penetrant, you worry that if they hit TRK at the same time, then that's a problem. But thankfully, this drug does have high objective response rates in the CNS. In people that were treated with up to 4 prior ROS1 TKIs, the CNS response rate was approximately 50%. In people that were treated with 1 prior ROS1 TKI, it was approximately 80%. And if you juxtapose those numbers against the favorable safety profile, I think that we have a good drug here. I think that the durability is an integrated metric that we all look for as oncologists, you're thinking about our patients, specifically the median progression-free survival, because that not only captures people who have responded, but also people who may not have had 30% or greater shrinkage that was confirmed, so people with stable disease. And I think that what we're seeing with the preliminary data in the 1 prior ROS1 TKI space is that we're seeing an upward shift in median progression-free survival, where you go from approximately 9 months to almost 2 years. What I hope is that once we move this drug, or continue, I should say, to move this drug into the TKI naive space, is that that'll extend to the first line TKI setting, where we hopefully will see a prolongation of median PFS relative to repotrectinib and taletrectinib, which already have good numbers at approximately 3 and 4 years respectively. My guess, though, is that with a drug like this that appears generationally distinct from these other agents, that will buy our patients even more time. Getting any drug approved is a huge win for our patients. And I think that we've seen historically that regulatory agencies, particularly the FDA, have gotten much faster at recognizing, hey, this is a good drug. It can work very well. And the magnitude of effect is great that we're going to prove it even based on early phase clinical trial data and single arm data. And so my hope is that we get a regulatory approval soon. That all depends on the FDA. And I hope that it echoes the regulatory approval or the labels for repotrectinib and taletrectinib in that it's line agnostic, so that an oncologist could give this in a TKI pretreated patient, but also in someone that's going to have their first TKI that's never had targeted therapy before. These are quite encouraging pieces of data, but these really echo what we've seen with many other agents where you have high response rates in the first line setting, even if you go back generations, that the response rates are in the 60 to 80% range with early generation agents. You see an upward migration with repotrectinib and taletrectinib, but we're still really seeing most patients benefit. So what I think we're going to need to see, and we will see with the maturation of the data, is with longer follow-up and with more TKI naive patients. The question is, what's the median PFS? And I know it will take a long time for us to get that readout, but I think it will be worth it, because if this truly is the best drug that we have for ROS1, we will see a substantial prolongation in median progression-free survival. I certainly think that patients who are coming off repotrectinib and taletrectinib will have a new agent if this gets approved that they can then use, which has shown substantial activity in that setting. And again, that's a landmark thing to observe, because we haven't observed this with other drugs in the past. But also, we recognize that the safety of other drugs with TRK inhibition isn't as optimal, and you don't want someone even with low-grade dizziness taking a drug for a long time. And so I think that in that setting, it'll probably replace some of these other agents in a TKI pretreated setting. And in the same vein, I think that ultimately, as we've said several times, if it is the best drug and it is the safest drug, that it'll just replace our first-line TKI standard and be the first thing that we prescribe for patients with ROS1-positive lung cancers.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates on oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, give us a like at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. And while you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air.